Well, two of the big news stories, Rachel, lead us to our next segment today. There's a list of the world's worst dictators featured annually in Parade magazine. And Raul Castro, who's been running Cuba since 2006, is at number 18. Okay. Now, another leader in the news today, as you mentioned, Pervez Musharraf of Pakistan, he ranks in at number 7 among the actions that earned him that spot, suspending his country's constitution, ordering the arrest of dissidents. Now, there are more than 70 dictators worldwide, but to get on this list, you have to have not only immense power, but also be responsible for, among other things, torturing citizens, suppressing press or free speech, detaining opposition. David Walachinsky writes the list every year. So, David, you were here with us yesterday discussing the Beijing Olympics and Steven Spielberg's withdrawal from the Games in response to China's ties with Sudan. There was a crossover there because the Chinese president as well as Sudan's president were on your list at number 5 and 2, respectively. So we thought we dipped our toe in this water, so we want to go a little further with you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Let's get your take on today's big news. Who knew that we would ask you to come back yesterday and this would be the news of the day, that Fidel Castro is officially retiring as president of Cuba. His brother Raul, been running the country since 06. He's at number 18 on your worst dictators list. Why?
Well, first of all, I started when I first started doing this list in 2003, Fidel was in the top 10. And then he began to drift down to the second 10 because his power lessened. And one of the factors I take into account is just how much power the dictator has. And so then it became unclear who was in charge. And then, you know, finally we saw that it was Raul. This is still very much a dictatorship. And by putting the Raul at 18, I don't mean to make him look good.
Right, right.
There's a lot of guys who are really worse.
Well, let's talk about some of those other folks. A lot of people paying attention to Africa this week because obviously President Bush is there. There are 3 African leaders on the list. We mentioned the president of Sudan. At number 6 is Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe and the president of Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki. I think I'm saying that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mugabe has been in power the longest of anybody on your list since 1980, but he didn't start out as a problem. But now his country's in tremendous economic trouble. What did he or didn't he do?
Well, what's tragic about Mugabe is that when he, he was one of the liberation leaders. Like in South Africa, you had Nelson Mandela, and Robert Mugabe for Zimbabwe, which was then known as Rhodesia, was one of the people who led this idea where we're going to have black African independence, and so there was a lot of hope for him. But as soon as he took over, it became really clear fast that he was into it for himself. And he got even with everybody who'd ever been mean to him. He took an economy which was quite strong, a lot of resources in Zimbabwe, and he just drove that economy into the ground. You have an annual inflation rate, catch this, of 8,000% and going up.
8,000%?
Yeah, I've seen these great pictures of, you know, huge piles of money to buy a bottle of beer.
It's like one of the highest inflation rates
in the world. You
have to carry
in a sack on your bag.
Yeah. Let's talk about Eritrea because it's in the news as well, certainly not getting as much play as some other international news stories. But right now, over the weekend, 1,700 UN peacekeepers, they're effectively stranded on the border between Ethiopia and Eritrea, which have been they've been engaging in this war over borders. And these UN peacekeepers are there with little food and little fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of Afwerki's involvement with this, why does he have them stranded and how does he retain power?
Well, here again, this is an interesting situation because in this sense, he's like a younger version of Mugabe, which was that he led a liberation struggle, and then once he got power, he wouldn't let it go. And, this year, Reporters Without Borders gave him the distinction as the government that most oppresses journalists, even worse than Kim Jong-il of North Korea, which is quite an achievement. And, you know, he has, you know, simply not allowed any privately owned media, no national elections. There's a constitution, but he refused to implement it, even though it was created more than 10 years ago. And he and Meles Zenawi of Ethiopia, who worked together to liberate their countries, have now used each other. They fight each other, which allows them to oppress their own people by saying, hey, those people are going to get you if you don't back me.
There are several names on the list I think people would recognize just from events of the past year. Tan Shui of Burma, Myanmar, number 3 for the headlines, the military action against pro-democracy demonstrations led by monks. We covered that pretty extensively on this show. Ali, and I'll make sure I say this right, Khamenei.
Khamenei, yeah.
Khamenei, thank you. I always get the
stress. Khamenei of Iran.
Iran for public hangings and persecuting dissenters. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia at number four. Despite our relationship with them, you know, we sell them arms, they sell us oil. You cite the lack of crackdown on terrorists, correct?
Yes. I mean, there's this, you know, obviously he doesn't want to be overthrown by al-Qaeda himself, but you look at Iraq and, you know, the majority of foreign fighters in Iraq are actually from Saudi Arabia, and you would think that that would be, you know, the responsibility of the head of the country to crack down on them.
Now, there's a name on the list that may not be familiar to a lot of people, Islam Karimov of Uzbekistan at number nine. Explain to us who he is and tell him why the power he wields when it comes to U.S. policy.
Well, Islam Karimov was fortunate that he was the head of Uzbekistan when the Soviet Union broke down. So he was in the right place at the right time, and then he took advantage of the old-style Soviet methods to stay in power, ordered the massacre of nonviolent demonstrators a couple years ago in Andijan, hundreds of people killed. You know, when 9/11 happened, it was like a dream come true for him because the United States came to him. Uzbekistan is an 85-mile border with Afghanistan. And so he allowed the U.S. to use an Uzbek air base and then kicked the Americans out, kicked us out when the U.S. government criticized his crackdown on these demonstrators. But we continue, actually, to, you know, our imports from Uzbekistan have doubled because he has uranium, which we use for nuclear power plants, nuclear weapons, armor-piercing weapons, etc.
Number one, not a huge surprise, Kim Jong-il, but he wasn't number one last year. Did one specific thing happen this year that vaulted him to number one?
A little bit of chaos in Sudan. You know, Omar al-Bashir is a terrible person, but in Sudan, you know, but he has quite, and that doesn't have the control that Kim Jong-il has over his people. I actually visited North Korea last year, which was quite an experience, and I was stunned by the total control that he has over everything that the North Korean people think. They have no idea what's going on in the outside world at all.
David
Wellich. I've seen a lot of oppressive governments. I've been to a lot of oppressive, you know, countries like that. But this was overwhelmingly the most repressive I've seen.
David Walachinsky wrote the World's Worst Dictators list in Parade magazine. Hey, David, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Anytime.
Hey, stay with us next on the BPP, Wisconsin. It's a tight race on the Democratic side. So now that state has a higher profile. We'll tell you why. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.